what we're talking about in terms of Orlando or San Bernardino, it's not a gun control issue. It is a terrorism issue.
Gun control fails in the U.S. Senate. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 20th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state lawmakers prepare for the next special session.
The reason that the governor's calling us back, the reason that we're doing this issue is because we do have to deal with more than just the permanent fund restructure.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to four-year colleges or other post-secondary education. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
In the U.S. Senate today, gun control measures fail to get enough votes to advance. Alaska's U.S. senators voted with their fellow Republicans, saying the two Democratic proposals would have infringed on Second Amendment rights. Senator Dan Sullivan says the limits focus on the wrong problem.
What we're talking about in terms of Orlando or San Bernardino, it's not a gun control issue. It is a terrorism issue. And the one thing that would have prevented those mass murders, which is what they were, and they're horrible, and everyone knows that. The one thing that would have prevented that was not having the rise of ISIS.
One of the amendments would have denied gun purchases if the attorney general had a reasonable belief the buyer was likely to engage in terrorism. Senator Lisa Murkowski says that would have denied thousands of Americans the right to buy guns, some because they were wrongly put on a terror watch list.
Way too broad, and the potential for false positives, in my mind, is just extraordinarily high.
Another measure that failed would have closed the so-called gun show loophole by requiring every buyer to undergo a background check. Murkowski and Sullivan say the measure would have had imposed unreasonable limitations on Alaskans. Democrats called the amendment small steps to help keep firearms out of dangerous hands. Alaska's legislature will have another 30 days beginning on July 11th to pass a long-term fiscal plan for funding state government. That's because Governor Bill Walker called them back for another special session. Legislators had a mixed response to the call. Some say they're open to working on new proposals they expect from Walker, but others are skeptical toward the governor's approach and say the legislature can return to the issue next year in the regular session. Andrew Kitchenman of APRN and KTOO in Juneau reports.
Walker says Alaska doesn't have time to wait for a long-term solution to state finances. That's why he supports drawing about 5% in earnings each year from the permanent fund to pay for the state budget. The plan also includes cutting permanent fund dividends. Without changes, his administration projects the state will run out of savings in 4 years.
Do we have to run out of savings before we fix the problem? And I'm saying we don't have to. We absolutely don't have to. So it's about getting the job done now. And so is it politically uncomfortable? Of course it's politically uncomfortable.
But it's not certain the permanent fund bill will come up for a vote. The Senate passed its version of the legislation, Senate Bill 128. But the House version never advanced from the House Finance Committee. And House Rules Chairman Anchorage Republican Craig Johnson says he's not interested in bringing a permanent fund restructuring up for a vote until the level of state spending is lower.
Is everything we're paying for, do we really need to be? What is the role of government? I think it's going to take a deeper look than what we can put together in 30 days.
Johnson says it could take one or two more years to go through that process. He also says he could bring up permanent fund legislation if there's support in the legislature. But he says he wants substantial backing from the majority caucus to make any change, not just an alliance of majority caucus moderates and the minority caucus.
This is an exceptional bill, and you know the caucus can make a decision. But that would be, I would want to continue maintaining the rules that we've used since I've been there.
Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says she's interested in the specifics of what Walker proposes the legislature look at in the session.
It seems a bit overwhelming at this time since we've been in session for almost 6 months, but I understand the governor's perseverance at trying to set Alaska on a fiscal path that is sustainable.
Some minority caucus Democrats want to ensure that the legislature considers more than just the permanent fund bill in the special session. They also want the legislature to consider additional taxes, like a statewide income or sales tax, as part of what they and Walker say would be a balanced plan. Juneau Democratic Representative Sam Keto III says Walker's special session proclamation has given the legislature the focus it needs.
I do think that there are all the pieces on the table now with the governor's call to put a package together that can save the state money and move the state forward into a more sustainable budget.
Keto also would like to see the legislature take action to cut incentives to large oil producers, and he'd like to see it consider the other taxes as well.
The reason that the governor's calling us back, the reason that we're doing this issue is because we do have to deal with more than just the permanent fund restructure. And more than just the permanent fund restructure means looking at those components of the oil and gas tax credit bill that were not addressed this past time.
One factor that could affect the session is how Walker handles the state budget. He has until July 1st to decide whether to veto budget line items. These changes could affect permanent fund dividends or oil and gas tax credits. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
More than 200 people are working the Tetlin River fire south of Tok. The wildfire, suspected to be human-caused, has grown to more than 1,000 acres since starting on Friday southwest of the village of Tetlin. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says the village, 16 miles off the Alaska Highway, is the focus of suppression efforts.
Protect the airstrip that is on the outskirts of the village and, you know, keep the fire from entering the village. And thus far they've been able to do that with the help of aircraft and just some hard work.
There are about 120 homes in Tetlin, but no evacuation order has been issued. Cooler temperatures and showers were forecast for the area today. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a dispute between former and present owners of the Alaska Dispatch goes to court.
It was awkward for me to continue working for someone when there was a $900,000 dispute between us, and she wouldn't address it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The MBA program at Alaska Pacific University provides working professionals an educational pathway to career advancement. Through APU's hybrid course format of online and campus-based courses, students can focus on healthcare, finance, technology, and strategic leadership options. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The owner of the state's largest newspaper is facing a lawsuit from a former top editor and business partner. Tony Hopfinger, the prior head of the Alaska Dispatch News, says publisher Alice Rogoff has failed to pay him what he's owed. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, the lawsuit hinges on differing interpretations of a $1 million contract signed on a cocktail napkin.
Hopfinger is basically suing over a dispute about severance, but next to that is a more substantial disagreement.
The big issue here is she still owes $900,000 and she didn't make the payment, so she breached the contract.
That contract is scribbled on a bar napkin, although Hopfinger says it actually came from a coffee table in a lawyer's office. In blue pen, Rogoff wrote, "I agree to pay Tony $100,000 at the end of each calendar year, beginning 14 for 10 years. The napkin is dated April 2014. Hopfinger and Rogoff were partners in a startup news site, Alaska Dispatch, which was preparing to buy the Anchorage Daily News paper for $34 million. That merger created the media company, Alaska Dispatch News. In the complaint, Hopfinger says his doubts about the acquisition started after the two began talks with McClatchy, the owner of the old ADN, in September of 2013. Hopfinger worried about the dying print industry and had reservations about Rogoff's plan to pursue new investors, including some he thought could bring conflicts of interest, like Anchorage developer John Rubini or McKinley Capital Management founder Robert Gillum.
I don't know if she had serious discussions with these individuals, but it made me uncomfortable to co-own with those folks.
Hopfinger says he asked to be bought out of his small ownership interest, and Rogoff verbally agreed. But as the weeks went on, no document spelling out the $1 million deal materialized until the napkin contract. What that $1 million actually bought is what's under dispute. Hopfinger says it's what he was owed for his share of the company. Rogoff's lawyer says it was intended to be a yearly bonus on top of his salary as editor of the ADN. Hopfinger had a separate employment contract detailing his salary and duties. He was paid the first $100,000 in January of 2015, but less than a year later, Rogoff's lawyer told him there wouldn't be any more payments coming, which led to an argument in a parking lot last December.
I asked her about it. She didn't want to talk about it. I was a bit upset. It was awkward for me to continue working for someone when there was a $900,000 dispute between us. And she wouldn't address it.
The two sides don't agree when exactly Hopfinger and ADN parted ways. It's unclear how much he was actually involved in the paper at that point. Months earlier, he'd relocated to Chicago to take care of his terminally ill mother. By the time of the December argument, he appeared to have moved his life out of Alaska. Rogoff and ADN editor David Hewlin directed an interview request to Anchorage attorney David Gross, who refused to speak on record. In an emailed statement, Gross described the Napkin contract as more of a loyalty payment than a buyout. He writes that Rogoff intended the payments as essentially bonuses to, quote, ensure Hopfinger was truly committed to the paper. The statement says that when Hopfinger remained in Chicago after his mother's death and remarried, he broke his employment contract and thus his loyalty to the business. Even if the court does see a buyout instead of a bonus, it's not clear what company Hopfinger was actually selling a share of. He's listed in business records as a 5% owner in a limited liability company called Alaska Dispatch Publishing. But he has zero shares in a separate LLC called AK Publishing, a company owned entirely by Rogoff and set up unbeknownst to Hopfinger 6 weeks before the merger. If the court decides to follow the letter of the business license over the spirit of the cocktail napkin, Hopfinger may be entitled to 5% of a company that no longer has any value. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The FBI says there was no threat to national security when a pilot crashed a small airplane into an office building in downtown Anchorage late last year. The Anchorage FBI office says it was an intentional act, but an isolated incident. Both the FBI and the National Transportation Safety Board have closed their investigations into the December 29th crash that killed the pilot, Doug Demarest. The Cessna 172 piloted by Demarest clipped a building housing a law firm on December 29th, then slammed into another building before most area businesses had opened for the day. A family spokeswoman said the death was a suicide. The 42-year-old Demarest was flying a plane owned by the Civil Air Patrol after taking it without permission from its hangar at Merrill Field, a small airport on the edge of downtown. A Dillingham woman has been missing in Juneau for nearly 3 months. As KDLG's Hannah Colton reports, the family of 30-year-old Lori D. Wilson has no information on her whereabouts, but continues to hope she'll be found alive.
Wilson went to Juneau in mid-March to get drug addiction treatment at the Rainforest Recovery Center. Gwen Larson says she last spoke to her younger sister on the phone on March 24th. At that point, Wilson had been at the hospital for less than 2 weeks, but Larson said she seemed to be in a good state of mind during the phone call.
And apparently that evening, she walked away. And so we got notified that she was no longer at her treatment center on the 28th or the 29th of March. And so my father went down that weekend.
The family reported Wilson as missing to the Juneau Police Department. And in early April, Larson also went down to Juneau to look. She posted photos of her sister, 5'4" and 130 pounds with shoulder-length dark brown curly hair. And Larson says there were several reported sightings of Wilson during that time, but none that she could confirm.
And so I was constantly watching the bus routes and going to the stores and kind of sitting in the parking lot, hopes that I would accidentally run into her, because we don't know exactly what kind of state she's in. We don't know if she's okay or if she's, we just don't know.
Larson says she doesn't think her sister knows anyone in Juneau outside the hospital, and she has not made contact with anyone, not her friends, her parents, or her three young sons back in Dillingham. And to add to her family's concerns, Wilson is now several weeks overdue for a throat surgery that she gets each year. It's due to a childhood accident that left her airway constricted.
She hasn't scheduled that yet, and this is a thing that she has to have. She has to have her throat dilated every year. We're worried for her and worried that she can choke and stuff. Usually when it's close to surgery time, she has to have soft foods and stuff like that.
The past few months have been difficult on the family, but Larson says they are holding out hope that Wilson is still alive.
If she hears this, that we love and care for her and we want her to call us. And her kids miss her.
If you have any information regarding 30-year-old Lori D. Wilson of Dillingham, you can call the Juneau Police Department at 907-586-0600 or use their online reporting system at juneau.org/JPD. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Alaskans were outraged when a group of oil companies based in Texas went bankrupt and stuck them with the bill. The legislature has made a change to the state's oil and gas tax credit program that is supposed to prevent something similar from happening in the future. The new rule requires oil companies get insurance. KTOO's Quentin Chandler reports with help from KBBI in Homer.
The name Buccaneer Energy is equivalent to dirt in some corners of South Central Alaska. Buccaneer went bankrupt 2 years ago while one of its subsidiaries was drilling for oil and gas in Cook Inlet. They left behind dozens of businesses that want their money.
Everything was fine to the end. They filed bankruptcy and still owed us about $8,000.
Lloyd Moore owns More and More Services, a garbage collection company based in Homer. He leapt at the chance to work for Buccaneer. The company brought a jackup rig into the Homer port, and they were giving out work up and down the Kenai Peninsula. But it all went south after the bankruptcy. Moore says the trustee of Buccaneer's estate sent him a letter demanding he give back about $70,000 of what Buccaneer did pay him.
Right now, I'm standing by my principles that it's wrong. I should have tried to work a settlement like the city of Homer.
Homer officials and a lot of business owners like Moore feel cheated by Buccaneer, and they're mad. Some say they expected a company that was vetted by the state and received state tax credits to be safe to do business with. That anger is why Representative Paul Seaton of Homer suggested the legislature find a way to protect Alaska businesses from another Buccaneer. He wants oil companies to set up surety bonds. They're like insurance policies for business deals.
The state would require when somebody got a oil and gas license in Alaska that they would either have to post $250,000 cash or they would get basically an insurance policy for $250,000 that said they'll pay their bills to unsecured creditors.
Unsecured creditors loan money or services on good faith.
What generally happens in a bankruptcy is the secured creditors want to get all the money, and so they have priority.
Buccaneer owes debts across the globe. The company's bankruptcy signaled the start of a race between creditors to get as much as they can, and unsecured creditors are at the back of the line. If money runs out before their turn, tough luck. Money taken from Moore could be paid to someone as far away as Australia. Surety bonds are supposed to be a safety net. Seaton says the bonds are set up to pay small business owners first. But Moore says $250,000 won't make a dent.
It wouldn't even cover Port Graham. And Port Graham is just one of unsecured creditors that were in the local area, not in the Kenai Peninsula.
Port Graham Corporation was created by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act to serve the Sukpiak people on the Kenai Peninsula. Moore says the real problem is in the bankruptcy law that allows lawyers to shake down businesses for cash. He thinks changes should be made on the federal level.
Or they're going to have $10 million or $100 million bond before it's really going to help make sure everybody gets paid.
The surety bond rule is included in the oil and gas tax credits reform bill the legislature sent to the governor. After his Buccaneer experience, Moore is wary of the industry. But that didn't stop him from signing up to work with Bluecrest Energy, another oil company drilling in Cook Inlet to the north of Homer and Anchor Point. He says if he wants to grow his business, he can't turn down the money players like Bluecrest are willing to pay. In Homer, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Arcadis, helping Alaskan owners with construction project management for over 22 years, from planning to completion. Learn more by calling 276-8095. Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
The Juneau Assembly wants the public to weigh in on a proposed ordinance that would outlaw many forms of discrimination, including that based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Juneau Deputy Mayor Jesse Keel introduced the measure. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has more.
So I identify as gay. And yeah, I'm personally not Catholic. I have a relationship with God. I don't identify with any religion.
That's 20-year-old Matt Magnuson. For about a year and a half, he's worked for a Catholic community service in Juneau.
Is where we would do all of our programming and working with the kids. So now it's pretty bare because we've just been cleaning house.
And now there's big stuffed animals
right,
in various
exactly.
states of packing. And
Right. And then when we come back...
His program is shutting down because grant funding has dried up. His job was to help kids with behavioral health issues. He worked with kids with post-traumatic stress disorder, reactive attachment disorder, and bipolar disorder. Catholic doctrine teaches that homosexuality is also a disorder, and that acting on it is immoral. You'd think Magnuson had a minefield of identity politics to navigate at work.
It's been really, you know, through talking with my friends and other gay people, they have a lot of problems sometimes at their jobs, and I've never once had a complaint working here when it comes time to my sexuality, which that's a really wonderful thing to be able to say as a gay person. A lot of times people have nowhere close to that experience, which is horrible. To come to the place where you spend most of your time during your life and be discriminated against, that's just an awful thing.
That's also in keeping with Catholic doctrine that discourages unjust discrimination toward gay people. Vatican bishops advise receiving gay parishioners with respect and sensitivity. Magnuson's nonprofit, which the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Juneau can influence through its governing board, would be within its rights to fire him simply for being gay. Agencies like the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights enforce anti-discrimination laws based on race, sex, age, religion, and other traditionally protected classes.
But they have a gaping hole when it comes to discrimination based on sexual orientation or on gender identity.
That's Juneau Deputy Mayor Jesse Keel. The 12-page ordinance he's proposing would protect those new classes in addition to the ones already covered. The ordinance would not create a new city agency to handle enforcement, but Keel says it would give victims of discrimination the grounds to take an employer, business, landlord, lender, or other institution to court where state and federal laws don't apply. Magnuson, who's grown up in Juneau, says for the most part, the community has been a loving and accepting place to be himself, for the most part.
But I mean, I've been in the store where I've heard people make comments under their breath behind me, and that's just a part of being gay. Whenever I go to Seattle, I can totally let my guard down. Like, I could walk with my boyfriend down the street holding his hand. No problem. Walking down the street in Juneau, we won't do. It's a small town. You don't see that.
He says Keel's ordinance is necessary and welcome. Keel says he shared the ordinance with faith leaders and thinks he's crafted it in a way that won't affect First Amendment religious freedoms. The ordinance must go through the committee process before a final vote by the Juneau Assembly. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
The first openly gay Episcopal bishop visited Anchorage over the weekend to kick off Pride Week. Retired Bishop Gene Robinson was consecrated in 2003 amid much controversy. He spoke with Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman. Robinson says he decided now was the time to visit Anchorage because of local religiously fueled opposition to the city's non-discrimination ordinance, which protects people based on their gender identity and sexual orientation.
Unfortunately, the conservative religious right pretty much owns the airwaves and TV stations and so on, and therefore people get this impression that homosexuality and faith are sort of mutually exclusive. And so I'm kind of a symbol of how that's not true. I'm a gay man, out, proud, and you can't be much more bought into institutional religion than being a bishop, right?
So what is your argument to counter the religious right?
I think it's important to remember from the very beginning that the three Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, all three have texts within their sacred texts that at first reading and on their face value seem to condemn homosexuality. It turns out not to be the case when you read those texts in their context, right? I like to say I take the Bible seriously enough not to take it literally. So the texts we are dealing with as religious people are 2,000, 3,000 years old. And we cannot assume that the words we read, and let's remember, they're translations. These texts are not written in English. These translated words may not mean today what they meant then. And so we have to actually look at context. The second thing is to understand that, and this is going to sound completely wrong, but homosexuality didn't exist in the ancient world. Now, same-sex behavior existed, but the notion of sexual orientation, even as a category, is only about 140 years old.
Let's talk about Orlando. What does it mean for the LGBT community?
I think for our community, it means that we're not as far along as we thought we were, that we are in more danger than we thought we were. We thought we'd made more progress than that, that we had at least safe places to go and sometimes safe cities and safe states where our rights would be acknowledged and our safety would be assured. And this has just shown how that is simply not true.
That was Bishop Gene Robinson speaking with Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Quentin Chandler, and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Hannah Colton in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs and dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The University of Alaska Southeast specializes in you. UAS is a learning community where your professors or mentors and friends on campus and online. uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. The Resource Basket is a training and technical assistance center helping rural communities support healthy, resilient, and culturally connected youth. Tribes and youth-serving organizations can request support, explore resources, and find opportunities at resourcebasket.org or call the team directly at 1-800-478-7227, extension 7396. This message sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.